Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sped Homeschool Conversations. Thank you for joining us tonight for this live discussion that we have every Tuesday night. This broadcast is sponsored by Sped Homeschool. We are a nonprofit that helps parents, empowers them to homeschool children with special educational needs. And our focus this month is reading remediation. And our topic tonight is strategies to support struggling learners. Sorry. And our guest is Barbara Steinberg. Welcome, Barbara, and thank you for joining us tonight and sharing with us some of your expertise in this area.
Thank you for having me.
You are welcome. I'd like our audience just to get to know you a little bit, what you do, why you do it, and I guess your background in helping families with children who struggle to read. And then we're going to kind of dive into our subject. But also we want our viewers to know, if you're joining us live, definitely make sure you add comments, questions as we go along. We want to make sure that you are also part of this conversation if you're joining us live. So again, thank you for joining us, Barbara, and we would love to get to know a little bit about you.
So I actually started working with kids 20 years ago as a classroom teacher. And after 12 years of being a classroom teacher, I decided that I really wanted to focus on a small niche of kids that had a certain set of characteristics. And those characteristics were that they were incredibly verbal, had incredible ability to communicate and to understand language when spoken orally. And they worked really, really hard. And they had great instruction. And yet, for some reason, when I listened to them read or I looked at their writing, there was just a huge, huge disconnect. And I couldn't understand what was going on for them, because even though I was a trained educator, nobody had ever really talked to me about dyslexia and how to support struggling students, because the public school system is really a one size fits all. And I made the decision to leave the classroom and to start working with kids and supporting families in a one-on-one setting about 10 years ago. And my company, PDX Reading Specialist, its mission is simple. We want to inspire individuals to become confident and capable learners. And we do that by really taking a holistic approach to supporting kids, not just focusing on weaknesses, but looking at strengths, looking at the social emotional well-being of a kiddo to make sure that their self-esteem is intact, and then coming up with a really comprehensive plan to be able to support each kid. And so my goal for tonight is to be able to generalize some of the things that I have been able to share with families one-on-one and make it applicable for a larger audience.
Yeah, I know we were talking about this before we started, and just how important it is for these children to have individualized plans, because they are so unique and so different, and they do need that one-on-one. But there are certain strategies, which we're going to talk about tonight, that do help. And so if you do want to check out more about Barbara's resources, she's also on our website as a partner, but also you can check her out at pdxreading.com. And we'll put up that information later too, as well as in the feed at the end and on the YouTube video. So you can make sure to contact her if you want to get in touch with her too. So I'm going to bring up your slides, and we're going to kind of use those visuals as we go along. So if you're listening to this on our podcast, I know somebody messaged us today and said, I'm listening to the podcast and I need the visuals. A great place to find those, if you are listening to this podcast and say, I want to see the images, go to our YouTube channel. These videos are also on our YouTube channel. They're super easy to find. They come out the same date as the full length one comes out on the same date as the podcast. So that's an easy way to locate them. So anyways, just a little bit of info there. So let me see if I can get over to the slides. My computer is being a little touchy. So I think the first thing you wanted to talk about was reading texts. And we're going to go into just supports in general.
Yeah, so I'm going to start with a general overview. I look at supporting kids as like building a stool that has three legs. And all three legs have to be equal to provide the best, most balanced stool.
Those
three legs include remediation, which essentially is the learning that needs to happen or the instruction. And I call those the bottom up, because we're working on things that need to help kids build skills from the bottom up. But the second leg of our stool are accommodations. And the accommodations are tools that allow kids to be successful. And I'm going to talk about some of those this evening. And that's the top-down strategies. And then surrounding both of those are advocacy, self-advocacy, and empowerment. And I decided to take this three-legged stool and to break it down into seven supports. So I chose seven, one for each day of the week. And I would say that these are my top seven recommendations on ways that families can support struggling learners, regardless of what their struggle is. So I'll start with my first support. And by the way, these are not in any hierarchical order. I had a really hard time deciding which ones to feature first in case somebody doesn't make it through the whole presentation, but they're all equally important.
Yeah. Okay. Here we go.
So my very first support is that we need to provide kids access to books that are at their intellectual level. So Peggy, are you able to advance to the next slide?
I all of a sudden got this. And this happened to me before. My pointer turned into a hand, and now I can't even click on that. So I'm going to have to bring up your slides and have you show them from your screen. I'm really sorry about that. But, yeah, I completely lost functionality now. So let me see. Just bear with me.
Can you see mine now?
So yes, we'll switch over to yours and there that, and I've got you on the right side of the screen so I can look at you now.
Excellent. So, this first support is to provide books to kids that are at their intellectual level. And I consider this to be one of the most important supports, because if a kiddo is a struggling reader and the only books that they're able to access are ones that they can read on their own with their eyes, then we're really limiting their ability to grow their vocabulary, to grow their critical thinking skills, to read books that are just exciting to them. And we don't want there to be feeling over their head just because they have potentially a word reading challenge. And so Ben Foss is a really well-known dyslexic individual who wrote a book, and he calls this ear reading. And essentially, it's access to audiobooks. And audiobooks used to only be available for the blind and dyslexic, but now we know that they're widely available. We can get them through local libraries, we can get them through Amazon, we can get them through lots of free streaming services.
Right.
And one of the things that Ben Foss says is that too many people are really fixated on the form instead of the experience. And what he means by that is a book is really a metaphor. It's a metaphor for adventure, for story, for learning, for knowledge. And the way that we crack open that book, it could be that we do it with our eyes. That's the way it's most efficient if you're neurotypical. But you can also crack it open with your ears. And if you're blind, you could also crack it open with your finger. And it doesn't matter which way you access that book, the experience is still the same. And again, it's really important that we stimulate kids intellectually, because that word reading deficit shouldn't hinder their ability to access any book that they have an interest in or any topic that they want to learn more about.
And I think we hear that from a lot of parents, is that, you know, my child isn't at this reading level, and what they are reading or what there's available to them is really babyish. And so they struggle with that. But that is a really good point that you make, is that to supplement that need for that literacy at a higher level with other supports.
Yeah, and especially as kids get older into middle and high school, and they have to read, you know, texts and nonfiction, which is filled with words they've maybe never seen before. And we really want them to understand the content of what they're reading and be able to listen to it. And to follow along visually while listening, so you're both hearing it and you're seeing it, is going to be extra beneficial. But listening to that with your ears is just as meaningful. And like I mentioned, there are lots of providers, and all of them are going to offer something a little bit different. Learning Ally, which is the one featured on the left side of the screen, used to be the only source of audiobooks. They were recordings for the blind and dyslexic. Right. And they've since evolved.
Libraries had access to that for people that wanted to access that cheaper than paying for a membership, I think.
Exactly. And now libraries really have gotten on board, so that access is not the limiting factor. Yes. And so I really, really, really encourage those who are supporting individuals who learn differently and may have difficulties with reading to not cut them off at the knees in terms of the books that they're able to have access to. Because when we turn our attention in a moment to thinking about the instruction, we want their dangling carrot of, I love books. I love reading. I love what they represent. We don't want to lose that. Because if we lose that, then we really have lost the motivation to want to work on something that might be more challenging.
And that was something I, with my oldest, I always did, because I knew that if we lost that, that there would be, and he didn't learn to read until he was 11. But the next year he was reading at college level because he was so motivated to get those books that he wanted to read. You know, he wanted to read the Iliad and the Odyssey. And he goes, don't give me the hard ones. I'm like, okay.
Exactly. Motivation plays a huge, huge role in kids' ability to learn. So that is support number
one. Those are some great resources. And yes, I know that parents will definitely, you know, we know about Audible, but, you know, Bookshare and some of those other ones you have on there, those are some great resources to pull from.
So I'm going to flip now and go to an instructional strategy. And my second support involves teaching from what I call the bottom up. Mm. Now, when you look at this pyramid, you can see that the bottom are these sounds and these symbols. And if we think about words, words are made up of sounds and symbols. And then those words combine to make phrases. And those phrases combine to make sentences. And the sentences, of course, are combined to make paragraphs, which are our stories. Mm-hmm. And so often when we have a kiddo who struggles, we want to work on having them read. And we want them to just keep reading and reading and reading. And absolutely having them reading text that is at their reading level. And then, like I said, having them listen to text that's at their intellectual level. Both of those build different pieces of the reading puzzle, let's say. But when it comes to instruction, we actually want to break it down, because working on reading from a teaching standpoint, it doesn't happen at the story level. It happens at the most foundational concrete level, which are those sounds and symbols. And because the majority of students who struggle with reading struggle with the ability to take words and pull them apart into their chunks, we need to teach kids what those chunks are. And to do that, we use something called, it's a big word, I know, a big education word, a phonogram card deck. And essentially what a phonogram card deck is a set of flashcards that doesn't include words. It includes the puzzle pieces of words. Because when kids can recognize what the puzzle pieces of words say, then they can come to any word, a word that they've never even seen before, and they recognize a chunk of it. But if they don't recognize a chunk of it, then they're stuck trying to sound it out. So I'll give you an example, Peggy. Think of the word light, L-I-G-H-T. So that word light has three sounds, O-I-T. But the way that that I sound is written is I-G-H.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I-G-H shows itself in the word night and fight and delight. And
yeah.
skilled readers see I-G-H in all of those different patterned words, and they store it in their brain so that the time they come to a word they've never seen before that has I-G-H, their brain's mm-hmm. letterbox goes, oh, I know that pattern, and it
right.
says I. Well, that's what isn't necessarily happening for the students that I work with and the ones that I'm really speaking about. They
right.
come to light or delight or fight or any word that has I-G-H, and they mm-hmm. go, O-I-G-H-T, ligata.
Mm-hmm.
And ligata is not a word. And
right.
to read that word, you have to be able to know the chunk IGH.
Mm-hmm.
And so a card deck like this is not about just the 26 letters of the alphabet. It's about all of the patterns that you
right.
see in words and how those patterns fit together to then make words.
Yeah, that's
and I use
color-coded
yeah,
like that. But that's I'm sure there's some kind of meaning behind that.
Well, yeah, because then when you start to put them together to make words, mm-hmm. you see those pieces. And
right.
this is that second piece of the pyramid. So if we take those sounds and symbols and we put them together to make words, mm-hmm. we know that, you know, the most basic words like cat and truck, those are the ones that even struggling students, struggling readers, they can figure it out. But when you look at that word cat over on the side, cat grows into a word like scrat, which of course is a nonsense word. It doesn't mean anything. But what I'm showing is how this basic word grows. And then that grows into a two-syllable word like becrat. And then all of a sudden, becrat grows into unbecratable, which those types of words, those multi-syllabic words, are where...
Mm-hmm.
struggling readers really start to face plant. Well,
right.
when you look at unbecratable, when you break that down, you see that each step below is just a simple addition. And
right.
so when you can learn those pieces that you add on, then all of a sudden unbecratable doesn't look like such a big scary word because you know each chunk of it.
Right. It seems like and I've noticed this with my one son that struggles. He just could not, on his own, break those pieces apart. And that seems
yep.
to be a natural struggle for these kids is that it has to be something that they are taught. They just
yeah.
don't, that just doesn't click.
Yep. It's not something they can intuit. And the unfortunate thing is that because we generally are wired to use all of our strengths and all of our compensatory strategies, kids memorize a lot of words, or they rely on context and stories, or they rely on the visual memory, like what's the length and shape of this word? What's the first letter? What's the last letter? And then they'll guess a word. And those strategies, they work for a little while, but eventually when you get to those big words like unbecratable, the strategies don't work anymore because the words become too big because they're polysyllabic. And so teaching those direct sound symbol correspondences is the foundational layer of instruction for any kid at any age who's struggling with being able to read words.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, we can start to put them together, right, into phrases and into sentences. Part of being a skilled reader is being able to not just read individual words, but being able to read with expression, to phrase, to have that expressive tone that we know skilled readers utilize. So you can see here this strategy called swooping, where we find the pieces of the sentences that go together so that kids can start to work on developing fluency. So first you have to be able to read the words, you know, she will swim on the ship. But to read it with fluency, which is the goal, we want it to be she will swim on the ship. And then
right.
the more complex
pauses that we would take in a conversation, but where, you know, that's taking it a step further is where are those pauses?
Yeah.
When you got to put the letters together.
Yeah. And it's always those little preposition words that are the trigger for the new phrase to begin. And lots of times our kids skip over them because those are the little words. They're not the content words. Mm-hmm. And then their fluency, their expressiveness really starts to decline because the structure is off.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So really building up from the bottom with those, practicing those sounds and symbols and then practicing putting those into words, whether they're real or nonsense, it doesn't matter. And then slowly building up to the point that we give kids an opportunity to practice reading books that are at what I call their eye reading level. So if ear reading is what we use for their intellectual level, then finding books at their eye reading level is their instruction. Now, you mentioned in the beginning that one of the greatest challenges of having an older struggling student is that the books are babyish.
Exactly.
And yeah, they really are. And we have to protect kids' dignity and make sure that we're not giving them books that are going to develop any kind of underlying shame about their reading.
Right.
And there are lots and lots of options for what are called high interest, low readability, meaning we have books that look like a chapter book, that have great content for older students, but that the patterns in the books are very, very familiar. Mm-hmm. And one company that I think does an outstanding job of providing a wide range of high interest, low readability books is High Noon Books. And quite affordable. And I've had lots of homeschool networks that have bought, you know, a set at a certain level and then traded. But giving kids the opportunity to practice the patterning that they've done in isolation within a book is a very important piece of instruction.
Yes. Yeah. Well, they feel like they've accomplished something instead of, oh, I'm still reading this beginning reader and I'm not, you know, getting the content like all of my other peers. And we talked about that social emotional piece that, you know, comes into play, and definitely can see how that would be beneficial.
So we're ready for support number four. And the remaining supports are actually all going to be around the social emotional. Mm-hmm. And the first one is really understanding that your child is not choosing to struggle. If reading were natural, everyone would be doing it. They'd be doing it with ease. It's a life skill. And because of that struggle, we need to be able to recognize when we have to accommodate. And these two big words, accommodation versus remediation, I want to really clarify the differences and talk about how the two.
A lot of times we'll make them the same thing.
Exactly.
And that gets frustrating for both you and your child when you're trying to do both at the same time.
Yes. And the arrows of that top down, bottom up, I say that where they meet is really the sweet spot. And where they meet is going to be different for different kids at different stages of their life. Like, I've met lots and lots of high school and young adults who, in spite of the fact that they could literally pick up any book and read it with their eyes, they still choose to pick up their audiobook because it's still hard for them. And so it allows their brain to just focus on the content and the meaning and not on how do I sound out this word, because it's still difficult. And I think that the important thing is getting to the place where you have the choice, where you can do both. And for some kids, without those audiobooks, without those accommodations, they're not able to access them. So the arrows vary in terms of distance from that sweet spot for every kid. But accommodations are those tools that help anybody be successful in whatever environment. And then remediation is that instruction that helps an individual learn, and whatever that may be. And there's really three important things to remember when it comes to accommodating. And the first is that, like I just mentioned, those accommodations are actually going to grow in importance as this student, as this child progresses through school. And that's because the demand in terms of quantity of reading increases, the complexity increases, and the amount of writing increases. And the reality is, because it's still hard, the amount of time it takes is still going to be more than a neurotypical learner. And for that reason, especially technology can make a huge difference for kids, allowing them, for example, to just get their words down on paper, allowing them to listen to that book so that they can then write the paper about it, whatever it might be.
Right. I know our guest last week was talking about language-based learning disabilities, and he showed a chart how the gap in high school between the average learner and the one that struggles, it actually widens in the high school years. And we often think, well, I worked so hard with this child. Why are they getting more behind? But that does happen because the demands are so much more, and you're taxing them on those things that they still are struggling to try to work on in the remediation mode. And so accommodations are what help bring that level they need to be.
Yeah, and really levels that playing field. The second big consideration is that it's a strengths-based approach. So figuring out what is this child's strength? What can they do well? And, you know, if that means receiving information orally, then let's use that strength to overcome whatever the weakness is.
Exactly.
And lastly, really giving a student the opportunity to demonstrate what they know and can learn. And a great example is in math. You know, language has become a huge part of math. And oftentimes reading the math problem is the real challenge, even if math is a strength. So let's read the math problem to them so that we can assess and access their math knowledge, not put up a wall before they, you know, have an opportunity to do that.
Right.
And I really can't stress enough that top down, bottom up. And I say it's like striking a balance between now and the future. And this button here is a story that came from a family who their kiddo has nothing to do with learning challenges, which is obviously my area of expertise, but their kiddo was gonna go to a private school and had to wear a uniform. And the uniform had a button, and this kiddo had fine motor issues with his fingers. And it's just before the start of school, and mom is crying, and the little kiddo's crying because he can't get this button. And school's gonna start, and he wants to be able to do this on his own. And she's telling me this story as in the midst of tears, and I just say, well, why don't you take the button off and put a snap on, put, you know, a hook on, put something else, Velcro. And it was like this light bulb moment for her. And that doesn't mean that this kiddo is going to come and have his mom take off the buttons on his pants when he's 25. He's going to learn, but he's going to learn when it's safe, when the stakes aren't high, when he's not in front of his peers. And so I like to think of accommodations in that light, making sure that if kids are asked to do something where the stakes are high, that we give them whatever accommodations they may need. And and that varies for every single kid. There's literally an accommodation for everything, but we have to be able to identify what the challenge is before we can know what a good accommodation is.
And we have to make sure that we are comfortable with those accommodations, because our kids understand when we become uncomfortable that we're having to accommodate them. And, you know, they feel that anxiety on our side. It is okay. Mm. Your child is not getting further behind because you're accommodating. You're actually helping them. And you're giving them the sense that I'm still okay when I need this, and it's okay when I have to ask for this. Because I have my brother, who's in his late 30s, he actually, yeah, but he's has really severe dyslexia, and we were playing this card game, and it requires reading, like reading fast, and we played it the first time, and we didn't win because he didn't read them all right. I mean, he guessed the wrong ones. It was kind of funny, but the next time he went through, he goes, you know what? Why don't you read all the words to me before we start? So then I know which one I'm trying to guess, because he totally didn't understand what half the words were.
Yeah.
Like, okay. And, you know, being around family, and he's just gotten so comfortable with himself that, you know, he knows this is what I need. I've got to ask, even if I'm in a crowd and we're playing a game. So, so you've got to get to that point where it's just, this is what I need, and I'm going to ask for it.
And you are so spot on when you say kids pick up on our uncomfortableness. And if they sense that we aren't okay with it, then they're not going to develop that self-advocacy to be able to say, hey, this is what I need to be successful. And that's probably what we want our kids to be able to do, is to advocate for themselves. But sometimes that means checking our own baggage, so to speak, and making sure that we're not projecting that onto the kids.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. That's
true in parenting.
So true.
So my fifth support is around finding a child's strengths and really growing them. Mm-hmm. There's a great quote by Albert Einstein that says, you know, if you judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree, it will believe that it's stupid. And it's really true. So much of what we ask kids to do in any setting, whether that is traditional school, private school, homeschool, unschool, is in the areas of reading and writing and math. And a while back, there was this psychologist named Howard Gardner who came up with this theory called multiple intelligences.
Yes.
And essentially, multiple intelligences is this idea that we're all smart, but in different ways. Mm-hmm. And there are these 8 smarts. And we all have them, but we have them in varying degrees. Mm-hmm. But when sometimes you are struggling in the word smart area or the math area, and those are the ones that are being highlighted all day, you start to lose sight of your strengths in those other areas. They aren't valued as much. You know, kids don't have to take tests in music or, you know, art. And yet so many of our kids' strengths are in areas like visual spatial. They're incredible architects and engineers. They can take things apart. They're athletes. They're intrigued by nature. They have a musical smart. Great inter and intrapersonal skills. They are, you know, talkers and thinkers. And again, if those aren't the things that we're explicitly teaching, then our understanding of what it means to be smart starts to become warped. And there are lots and lots of ways to start a conversation around multiple intelligences. And one of my favorites is to do a family survey. And if there are multiple people in a family, it's fantastic, because every single person takes this survey and read the questions aloud. You can then chart where your real strengths are and where your weaknesses are, and start to have a conversation about how every single person in this family has different strengths and different weaknesses. And I always say that for every minute or hour that you devote remediating or working on a deficit, a weakness, spend the same amount of time developing that child's strength.
Yeah.
And every kid has a strength. Mm-hmm. Every kid.
Yeah, I often tell parents, because I used to get questions like this as a consultant. They were like, I took everything out of school except for the stuff that they really had to do, and they're still not getting it done. This is why you don't do that. Because if all you focus on all day long is what they don't do well, they are going to just go into this pit of despair. And I always tell parents, add in a class that's their strength, even if you don't think it's academic. Yeah. Add it to your schedule because yeah. that's what boosts them up and yeah. will help them to get through. Oh, I get to do this after I do this thing that I don't like so much and make it school because yeah. it shows that they are intelligent. And those are skills later yeah. in life that are valued.
Exactly. I mean, I tell kids that we don't want everybody to have the same smarts because yeah. that would be we all are doing the same jobs and careers. And what makes us all so unique is that we all have all these different, you know, strengths. Mm-hmm. But it requires a real explicit conversation and activities and looking at a wheel such as this to start to bring awareness to kids that this is legitimate, that we're not just saying you're smart for the sake of saying you're smart. No, you really are. You're really intelligent. I often joke with kids, I really, really, really lack in that visual spatial. I cannot look at a Lego manual and figure out where the pieces go. And yet the kids I meet are the most incredible builders and they see it in their head and they can build it. And right. I'm in awe of that intelligence because they're going to be the engineers and architects and builders. And thank goodness because my strength is also.
Yeah. Yeah. It is amazing when you start looking outside that academic box and look at your child as a whole person and the gifts that they have. It's just incredible. And then to be able to, like when they struggle to read, build in those gift areas into their reading and writing curriculum. As a homeschooler, right. you have that advantage. And that I took advantage of that highly with my kids. My one loved film, and especially my struggling reader. And he can now read foreign film text, you know, for two and a half hours straight, except he still can't read a book without getting so so yeah. he's reading and it's of interest to him. Yeah. But you just have to find a different way to do it.
Yeah. Yes. Words are words are words, regardless of the form. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So with that, this feeds into my support number six, which is helping to build a growth mindset. This word mindset really came about from a woman named Carol Dweck. And she wrote a book called Mindset about how what we have in our brains is not fixed. And our brains have this incredible what's called neuroplasticity. We can rewire our brains. But the ability to wrap your head around that, to understand that because it's hard right now, doesn't mean that it's going to be hard tomorrow. And she gave us one word that is life-changing, which is, you know, if you say, I can't, fill in the blank, add on the word yet. I can't read yet. I can't spell yet. And that could be with anything, not just academic. But getting kids to the point of adding that word yet and really believing it, because we can have, you know, all the great curriculum and all the time in the world. But if we've got a kid who is completely decided that they hate reading or they can't, that's a much bigger challenge. And I have a couple of tools or resources to help kids that may be on that more fixed side of I'm frustrated, I give up, failure, I'm, you know, destined to not do this, and to help them transition to a growth mindset where I will take on this challenge. And maybe we experiment with this with something outside of academics. Like I decided I was going to learn guitar. Incredibly frustrating. And I had to keep saying, I can't do it yet. I can't do it yet, but I will.
Right.
And it just changes the way that you think about the challenges that are put in front of you in life. Mm-hmm. And it's a life skill. So the resources that I wanted to share, there's, I put her book, Mindset, and the tagline is The New Psychology of Success. And it's a wonderful book. It's not at all geared towards education. It's just about life and how we look at challenges. But the other three are really geared towards working with kids. And all of them, well, the two organizations, Mindset Works and the Mindset Kit, both of them have so many free resources about talking with kids about their brains, how their brains work, how we rewire our brains. And I highly recommend checking out both of those. And then the one thing that is a paid product is called the Big Life Journal. And it's a wonderful, wonderful journal intended to, you know, be used by an individual. And it provides prompts that are responded to with pictures and helps kids slowly start to grow that growth mindset. And I found that the kids who struggle the most with moving from a fixed to a growth mindset are the ones who have an underlying shame about their struggle because they've internalized it as something being wrong with them. Yeah. And that's not at all true. I mean, our brains, they were never wired to learn how to read. That is something that we have to be taught. And even with great teaching, for some, a lot of us, like 20%, our brains are wired differently. And so we need to learn about our brains. And it's amazing to watch this transformation for kids. It's not easy. It's not quick, but it happens slowly. It's this metamorphosis that happens slowly. And like giving a baby peas, you just keep giving it to them. And eventually, hopefully they like it. And they believe it. And they start to internalize it.
I know we talk to parents a lot when they pull their kids out of like a public school setting, and because they've been so defeated, we even deal with a lot of kids that have trauma issues, and they come in to the homeschool setting with all of this fixed mindset because it's been so programmed into them by how they've been taught. And so we always tell parents to deprogram first. Don't even try teaching because you're dealing with a brick wall. And you can't teach a child that has stopped. You've got to open that door. And now a lot of that is just learning that learning is different, that they have the capability, and, you know, doing field trips and things like that to kind of broaden their perspective of what learning is and that they can learn is so important. And so I can see how these resources would be great for that deprogramming time, especially for those kids that are trying to come to grips with, I am not who I think I am or who I feel like I've been labeled as.
Yeah. I mean, when you think about trauma, we know neurologically that when you are experiencing trauma or a recurrence of trauma, that the area of your brain responsible for learning is actually shut down. And so that deprogramming that you're talking about, I can't emphasize enough how important that is, because otherwise, like you said, you really are just working against a brick wall. Mm-hmm. And with that, I think that my, you know, seventh strategy or my seventh support speaks to that so well, which is to celebrate that neurodiversity. Neurodiversity is that idea that we're all really smart. And when we, you know, give our kids that messaging, I say this as a parent myself, our kids are expecting to hear that from us because we're the parent. And when they hear it from other people, and when I say other people, I'm talking about perhaps other kids, others who have walked the walk that they're walking, then all of a sudden now they're hearing that from multiple avenues, and it's powerful. Yeah. One of the greatest things to happen as a result of increased awareness around dyslexia is there are books coming out of the woodwork of either characters that are featured, like Percy Jackson, that have reading struggles, or books that directly talk about, you know, my gift of difference, or Tom's special talent, or the alphabet war. And when we read these books to our kids, or they read them to themselves or listen to them on audio, they are hearing that message of, I am not alone, because it's really lonely when you have a reading challenge, because the challenge is in your brain. It's not something we can see. And again, that shame or the trauma that may have happened if kids were, you know, in a traditional public school, is that this is about something being wrong with me. I once had a kiddo say to me, my brain is broken. And we had to start there.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a very robust book list that is separated out between books to read to your child, books that are for, you know, more caregivers. And I invite you to email me and I'm happy to share it. Or Peggy, if you have a place that I could send it to you and you can post, it's a wonderful, wonderful resource. And I think that adding that in as part of a day to you know, celebrate neurodiversity is a wonderful support. And even though it's support number 7, it really encompasses all of them. Because like you said, we need to make sure that kids feel empowered to want to learn how to read and write and spell and do math.
Yeah, and they will get there. They just have to know that it's going to happen, and they just have to keep pushing forward. But yet, with those proper accommodations, they won't feel that pressure that I'm so far behind that I can't do anything that I want to do. We don't want to be here either. So if you send me that resource, just know if you're listening to the podcast or watching this recorded, I will make sure that that link is on the YouTube channel.
Oh, great.
So I usually put in a whole bunch of different links with the YouTube video so that people can kind of get to those quickly. So that's
okay.
The place to go for that. So yeah.
And then I'll put up my, my contact info.
On the side here too, just so it's easier to read.
I mean, it's always a challenge to generalize, but I'm hopeful that these 7 supports that your listeners can at least take 1 or 2, and it will enhance their tool belt in terms of effectiveness and supporting their own kids. And obviously, if you have specific questions about your kiddo, please reach out. I always say I will talk to anybody and guide them in the right direction to the best of my abilities.
Well, thank you so much. It was so encouraging. I mean, just after our interview last week and talking about language-based learning disabilities and now going into, you know, these strategies that that you gave us, I think, you know, parents, hopefully after these last 2 weeks, you realize that those questions that I get so often of how do I catch my child up in a year is not the question you should be asking.
Yes.
How can I empower my student to learn and yet accommodate them through what they need to be accommodated so that they can keep learning? And that's really where we have to meet them. And thank you for that encouragement. And, you know, there are so many great resources out there. And I know, you know, you have a lot on your website. So you want to check out pdxreading.com too, and all Barbara has to offer. And then just, you know, watch your child. I think that's what we keep saying over and over again, is this is about them. And it's about their pace and where they're showing you that they need instruction and they need help. And you just have to give them what they need.
Yeah. Yeah, well said. Well, thank you for having me.
Yes, this was very fun. I'm glad that we were able to get you on our show and to share your resources. And thank you all for joining us. We didn't have any questions again tonight, but that's okay. If you do have questions, definitely follow up with Barbara afterwards. I know a lot of people tune in later and catch the video or the podcast. It's usually a little easier for them. So, but definitely check out Barbara's things as well as our websites, bethomeschool.com, where you can find links to our podcast and our YouTube channel and all those other things. And join us on a weekly basis. But this whole month, we're focusing on reading remediation. So next week, we actually are going to be talking about teaching reading comprehension for academic success. And we're going to be meeting with or interviewing Dr. Marion Blank. And she has developed two different reading systems, one for children on the autism spectrum. And she is a professor as well as done a lot of research in the areas of reading and children with different issues, but comprehension is one of the areas that she specializes in. So we're going to talk about comprehension next week. So this broadcast was brought to you by viewers like you who donate on our website to our nonprofit at spedhomeschool.com. If you want to keep this conversation going and talk about homeschooling and special education, definitely join our Facebook support group where we're talking about this all the time. And that's a moderated group. It's a really safe place to be. We have almost 2,000 people in that group. And so there's lots of different conversations going on all the time. If you have things to say, definitely you can contribute. And if you have questions, ask those and other people contribute to those as well. So let's keep the conversation going there. But until then, we will see you here again next Tuesday night. So have a great week, everyone. And thanks for joining us. And we'll see you then. And thanks again, Barbara.
Thanks so much.